I love this service. You think of any late-breaking questions, feel free. I might even get through all these in our usual time today. So you can wave wildly and pass them up, and I'll try not to just put them at the bottom so nobody will know which one is yours. This one seems like, you know, there's questions and then there's rhetorical questions. I'm getting the feeling, especially with the PS on this one, that it's more of a rhetorical question, but I'll answer it anyway. Do you think it's really possible to speak about Jesus' significance as a teacher and not elicit all the other Savior, Son of God, died for our sins stuff in a congregation? P.S., there are lots of other great teachers to mention. I'll take that as a reminder to make sure I mention more great teachers, because it's true, there are so many, aren't there? I tend to mention them sort of implicitly by, you know, reading their poetry or something, but it's... I got a great lesson from Misha, Big Mike, who was visiting this morning, about George Washington Carver. I mean, oh my gosh, I just found out so much, so you might hear about him. Anyway, clearly for me, yes. I realize that for some people, just mentioning the word Jesus elicits all the other stuff, not to mention probably a little PTSD. And I recognize that I was very blessed to not, you know, as were people who grew up in a sort of liberal Christianity. I grew up not Christian at all and taught from the very beginning of my life that Jesus was just a guy. So I don't really have that kind of baggage. A little bit of the baggage of, could you stop with the Christmas carols sometimes at Christmas time, like you do growing up Jewish. So for me, I realize it's kind of easy for me to just come to Jesus as, come to Jesus. To approach Jesus as just an interesting teacher and all that, you know, all the complexity and contradictions, and we don't really know who this person was, you know. Nobody tells the same story, the story the same way. But I also recognize that for some people, yeah, it's kind of traumatic. So I hope that can be healing for you, not just for in the congregation, but because we live in this culture that has taken Jesus, this poor one interesting guy, and piled all this really horrible stuff on his story, that it's good to, you know, have some alternatives for that. But I hear you. Other teachers deserve a mention too. I'm sure Jesus would say the same. Amidst the wars and political hatred, how do you find hope? I think I get asked this question in some form every time I do this. God, finding hope is such a big thing, isn't it? For me, it's small ways and large ways. You know, small ways, which you could call, you know, try to focus small. Don't even look out there sometimes. Just the joy of living, you know, just being, just taking in the beauty around me and my, the softness of my cat's fur and the joy of being with my family and interesting conversations with you. And gorgeous music, you know, that turns my heart to the more important things of just day to day. In the large sense, it really helps me to just look at how much we've overcome. Things that just seemed so hopeless at the time. You know, it used to be legal to own human beings in this country and work them and beat them to death if you wanted. And it must have just seemed impossible that we would ever change. So I take some heart from that. With the political situation like Gaza, I look all the time to Ireland, Northern Ireland, which when I was younger was just one of those intractable problems. I thought they're never going to fix this. They are never going to fix this. There will always be extremists who are ready to blow something up on either side when the people in the middle are trying to live in peace. And, you know, it's pretty good there now. That's what gives me hope. Connection is what saves us, yet modern life makes it harder and harder. How do we overcome that? I think we have to be countercultural. You know, don't do what modern life tells us to do, says the woman who stares at her phone God knows how many hours a day. You know, we're pretty free in this room. As human beings go, we're pretty free. We don't have to do what marketers want us to do, what the creators of apps want us to do, what COVID wants us to do. You know, we can reach out and make connection. And I guess like so many other habits, I think it does get easier if we practice. You know, we learn how to make connections, so overcome the inertia and do it, and it will become easier. I don't mean to be glib about any of these things. I'm always aware when I answer these questions that there's so much more under them, and I'm up here trying to give answers. So please come tell me if, like, Amy, that didn't really answer what I was asking. I hope these are all conversation starters. Speaking of which, I gave a warning this time in the website, but if you didn't see it, since the last time I did a question box service, I became an online advice columnist. If you haven't cottoned onto that, I have an advice column called Ask Isabel. Ask Amy was already taken. Isabel's my middle name. Advice for the spiritually perplexed or vexed. And I answer a religion question weekly. Oftentimes I'm looking through Reddit and Quora and stuff to find what are questions that are out there. And now I'm gonna have a whole pile from you all. And of course I will not identify, you know, I'll take out anything that could possibly identify what anybody is, who anybody is, but if you still are like, please don't, I don't wanna see my question in print, come tell me. And I won't use it in my cup. How can we dance more together at UUCPA? Freelance dance. I don't even know what that means, so I'm going to need your help. Woo! Freelance dance. We just follow Marisha. A wide range of music. Let's do this. How? You know, when we've had dances, like not in the service dance time, it's usually because somebody organizes it. So go. You know, I or the board or whoever, you know, needs to say, Jeff who needs to say, yeah, put it on the schedule, will make it happen and help you promote it. I know Jen Dillinger. Jen, is Jen here today? I know that she has this love of creating dance parties, and she's one of our community ministers, and our community ministers give something to UUCPA each year. They might lead a service or a workshop. Melissa Thompson, another of our community ministers, is a co-leader of the By Your Side Singers. So when Jen and I were talking and she said that, I said, you could do that. That would totally be a great thing to do. That would be just as exciting as a sermon from you. So she may. But honestly, what makes stuff happen around here is other people make it happen. I could work a lot more dance into the services, it's true. So I'll take that as a nudge too. I really love to dance. Of course, not everybody loves to dance to the same music, so I appreciate that note. Like, all kinds of music, you know? You want to get me dancing, like, put funk on, and I can't stop. But that's not the dance that makes everybody move. Paul Costco would like me to announce that we have a community dance coming up that he is creating. But Paul, I don't know the date. Shout it out for me.
May 18th.
May 18th. Thank you so much. You see, I would have forgotten, even though when I started answering the question, I had that in my mind. May 18th, and Paul is just making it happen, and if you put it into the publicity stream, anything you're making happen at UUCPA by just writing to publicity@uucpa.org, our publicity folks will make it, get it out there to everybody. Oh, how can we best protect our beloved, beautiful wildlife, the deer, the wise owls, the precious, wonderful polar bears, et cetera, et cetera, etc. God, all those fabulous charismatic megafauna and the not so charismatic little things that make the world go round as well, right? Again, I think there's like just heartache in that question, but also, I know, I like our actual how. I mean, you probably already know this, but I think it's important. Like when our kids hear about animals, they think about the particular animals and what can I do for this one, and they're like, save the polar bear or whatever, but we know that the greatest threats to species tend to be habitat destruction, right? Their habitat is broken up by our development into bits or pieces or taken away altogether. And the big ways that we're changing the chemistry of the oceans and the warmth of the climate. So it's big stuff. I mean, it's not, you know, it's great to to focus on a particular species that you may love, but really what we need to do is stop allowing short-sightedness to destroy habitat, stop allowing crazy policies to keep warming the planet. And I mean, I tend to think we really need to get control of capitalism and think more communally. That's just me. Not just me. Okay. But you know, we focus, I mean, I preach this so many times. We focus so much on individual solutions, and they're great, they're very important. I have the good fortune to be able to buy a new car, and it was time for me to buy a new car, and we could manage to buy an EV. That's great. That's fabulous, but individual people buying EVs or recycling their stuff are just a tiny, tiny bit of the solution. We need to work at the level of policy and the things that, you know, one changed policy can really have an effect that all the individual actions don't have. So, policy wonkery. Has UUCPA ever reached out to public schools to help educate on all world religions as a community service? What a great idea. Not as far as I know. I'm putting this over there to hand it to Kat. It's Kat Sunday off, otherwise she would have been up here answering questions. Now that's a great idea. I mean, I don't know how well the schools around here do this. Some do, some don't. It's permissible to teach world religions. And I think we would do it pretty well. We're good at teaching in a way that is respectful of all religions and not trying to shove one down anybody's throat or disparage any. And we do, after all, there's, from what I hear from parents right around here, there's pretty good sex education around here, but we still offer OWL and put it out to everybody saying, we got really good sexuality education that you might want to come here for. I like it. Oh, back to the previous question. Does lighting the chalice contribute to global warming? I'm gonna take that as a serious question about, like, can we do those things that are not moving in the right direction if they're small enough and important to us? Like, it's okay to have candlelight dinners. It's okay to light a little bit of petroleum product on fire for an hour of your service. If we take care of the big stuff, I think so. But technically, sure, there's a net gain in global warming every time we light the chalice. What question do you like to ask new members of UUCPA? And I'm going to edit that slightly, because really when I'm asking people questions, tends to be even before they join, right? They start visiting and I ask them. So I ask them what brought them here, what they're interested in, what motivated them to come look for a religious community, because I am not a small talk person, and I figure being the minister gives me license to cut to the chase. And those are big questions, you know? Sometimes people are willing to really tell, at least the minister, something deeper. And you hear really interesting things when you ask that. A partner just died. I'm really in need of a community, which is what people are saying. I'm lonely. And I'll tell you what I mostly hear. It took me a really long time to learn this. I was always like, people come here for our theology. People come here for community. Like, if I ask that at a Discovering UCPA group or something like that, almost everybody says one way or another they're here because they need community. Connection, somebody was saying earlier. So I think our theology is important. Like, I'm sure the Mormons around the corner are a very nice community as well, and the people there come for community. But the people who come here are like, it's really not going to work for me to go to the Mormons. I need community in a certain context. But that doesn't mean they came here because they want to talk about Theodore Parker, another great man. Flawed, but great man. So, good reminder to me, but such a good reminder to all of us. People are looking for connection. So try to take that risk and go a little deeper. Just invite people, not like, you know, grab a newcomer and ask them deep, deep, deep questions that are going to make them run screaming, but just always just kind of go a little deeper, dare a little bit more about our sharing to invite people to really make community. We have casual relationships in our lives, less maybe after COVID and everything, fewer than we used to have, but most of us, if we work and take our kids to school and everything, we have casual encounters. What I hear people are hungry for is a deeper connection. You know, who can I share my heartbreak with and my questions with, and what's really going on in my life with? What is UUCPA's, our most important purpose right now? Oh, this person's got a few questions. So, well, we have it right here. And again, I don't mean to be glib, but we really worked at putting that together, right? We gathered to deepen our spiritual lives, nourishing connection, learning from each other, caring for each other, tending to our world. That's kind of four in one. I realize, but I think our... I mean, in some ways, everybody's purpose is to save and savor the world. That's an E.B. White quote, right? To make this world a better place, let us hope, one, that humans and other fabulous animals can actually live in a few generations from now, and that where we don't kill each other too much, all of that, and to live fully, to really live joyful, love-filled lives while we can. So that's the big purpose. But what do? You know? I mean, the Sierra Club does that in a very specific way. Our specific way is to help people connect and create something together. We learn together. We take care of each other in hard times. We celebrate for each other in good times. We try to teach values to our children and to older folks as well. I mean, that's how we do it. I'm fudging by answering a lot of things. But I think, you know, keeping the big purpose in mind, and then remembering, okay, how do we do that? We make music together, we talk together, we share meals, the things that religious communities do. I know I've got a question up here about decline of religious communities. I think over and over again, if something like a church didn't exist, we'd have to invent it. They're really good organizations. Like, human beings have really figured out something good in the US American faith community. And nurturing it is how we address those higher purposes. Also, this person wants to know, can you recommend any funny movies with encouraging UU messages? yeah, sure. I mean, I preached on Barbie a few weeks ago, right? Old school, I keep thinking I have got to sit down with my daughter and watch Harold and Maude, which I haven't seen in decades, and she has never seen. Like, you cannot go through adolescence without seeing Harold and Maude. I think the messages there are you. If you want to sing out, come on, do it. And also, I don't think she's discovered Cat Stevens. Like, what am I doing wrong here? Letting her choose the music when we drive too often, I guess. I don't know. I really love comedies with encouraging messages. I don't know if this one's funny, but in recent years, Everything Everywhere All at Once is a really profound movie for me. If you don't like violence, it's not good. There is a lot of fighting, but I usually avoid that, but I just found it really encouraging in a very deep way. Toy Story. Honestly, I think Toy Story 3 is one of the best movies to have come along in the last 20 years. And I know I had another one in mind, but I forgot. And what have you done for fun this past week? Yesterday, Joy and I went up to Sonoma, got together with a couple dear friends of ours, and we wanted to do this a couple weeks ago, but it was pouring, so we rescheduled. The three wine drinkers in the group, all of us went to a winery and had a tasting and everything, and I don't drink wine. I just taste each one and say, yuck, tastes like wine. So it's totally wasted on me. That's my constructive response. My less constructive response is $125 for that bottle, huh? Okay. But they love it. So I walked around and joined in the conversation. And before that, we ate fabulous food. And after the tasting, we ate fabulous ice cream. And in between, we enjoyed Sonoma and each other's company. So that's my idea of a fun day. And as always, when I do anything like that, as we were driving up there, fossil fuel free, we were saying, oh my God, it's so gorgeous. Like, nobody goes in March, right? What is it now, April? It's so green up there, it's so beautiful. We should do something like this more Saturdays. You're here, okay. What would you say is the shadow side of humanism? As a humanist, I think about this a lot. I mean, I even know humanists who are like, they don't like to call themselves humanists because there's so much icky baggage. There's always icky baggage. I think arrogance. You know, the idea that we have all the answers or everything we need is in humanity. I tend to think of humanism as a filter. Like, whatever you might believe in, if you believe in a God, that all comes through human experience. It comes through your perceptions. If you've had a mystical experience, fabulous. I mean, so maybe you kind of jump that. But I think what, for me as a humanist, what it means to be a humanist is to recognize no matter what we choose to follow, we choose, a human being has chosen to follow that, to take that experience seriously, to follow that tradition or scripture. And so it should be a moment of humility. But, you know, it can get arrogant, too, towards other people. Oh, those people are foolish if they have these mystical experiences or believe that kind of stuff. I guess that's human beings, right? I mean, our shadow side is to take whatever wisdom we've discovered and narrow it down, like, therefore, it's the way. Yeah. Open up. And another thing is, and I certainly run into this, maybe even in our questions today, an allergy to religious language and so on. I'm very much in the Ken Patton school. If you look in, there's a bunch of readings in our hymnal by a Universalist minister named Kenneth Patton. He was a real humanist, rock solid, and yet he was not shy at all about using words like grace and salvation and so on. I mean, he just claimed them. And I think our humanism has narrowed to this point, like, oh my God, we can't talk about things like that. And like, hi, I still believe in sin. Sin is doing bad things, hurting people or animals in the earth. You don't want to call that sin, fine, but when people say sin, that's the kind of thing that they mean, doing bad things. And I think we lose something if we give up all our theological or theologically tinged language. And humanism can be overly concerned with that stuff. So I will follow Patton, who's just like, whatever, it's live the way you live. Don't worry so much about the language. With the decline of participation in formal religion, how does UUCPA fight this trend? We are informal religion. We aren't organized religion, we're disorganized religion. It's a real problem. I mean, listen, and I talk to colleagues and so on, we're all aware that, you know, maybe we are, oh, I don't know, what's the equivalent? You know, those clerks whose whole job for generations was like, rewrite legal documents and everything. We're, you know, and the typewriter is coming along and after at the computer. Like, we are in a dying business. I definitely have that question often and mostly, you know, on a sloppy day, I think, oh, well, I'll be retired and probably dead before it's all gone. But in a deeper sense, like I said, I really care about, I think we've got something good here. As Unitarian Universalists in particular, even with all its ills and bigotry and everything, religious community as a whole, I think it's worth nurturing. And I think there's a lot of people out there who are looking for something exactly like what we offer here, and they just don't know it. And it's hard to tell them without coming across as exactly the kind of people who made them not know it. You know, like Pat Robertson and everything. I mean, religion has a bad name, and it, you know, deserves it for a lot of reasons. But politics also deserves a bad name, and yet it's where really good things can happen. So, you know, I think we just have to be willing to keep getting the word out there, keep inviting people, keep letting people know, doing things like this, authentic selves, letting people know this is what a religious community looks like. you know? And again, that's not just an individual thing, but carry on. What was the process you went through to become a UU minister after having been raised Jewish? Oh, wow. Well, I'll just take, like, you know, another 20 minutes to answer that one. Okay, I'm glad that's my last question because it really is time, and I'll try to be really quick. I grew away from Judaism before I knew there was any other alternative that would work for me. I didn't know about UUism. I knew I didn't want to be a Christian or anything. I stopped believing in the God that I had believed in, and so I now recognize that that was very typical for the developmental stage I was at. That was, you know, I was a teenager, and I thought, oh my God, I used to really believe like I had some guidance from God, and I don't believe in that God anymore, and now what do I do? That's very common, and I think an important process of questioning to go through, and I've never come back from it. But a couple things stuck. My family, first of all, they were tolerant of that. They were like, fine, Amy, you follow your own path. So I was raised to be a questioning person, and when I questioned my way out of Judaism, my parents were supportive. I think they were a little sad, but they were supportive, and they've kind of questioned their way out themselves, I think, in many ways now. And I was really raised with the idea that what is important in a person's life is how they treat other people, what kind of person they are. And if their religion makes them a good person, great, yay for that religion. It doesn't matter what religion it is, you know? And if it makes them a bad person, then it's not worth, you know, following that path for them. So all of that really encouraged me to go follow my way, and then through kind of bumping and accidents and finally recognizing that this thing I kept bumping up against was maybe a path I could follow, I discovered Unitarian Universalism, and I already wanted to be a minister. That part was easy. When I was 12, I wanted to be a rabbi, and the only reason I stopped harboring that dream was because I didn't believe in God anymore, and I thought that wasn't going to work. I also honestly would have had a lot of problems with the form of Zionism that I think is just so, there's so much pressure for rabbis and Jewish people in general to accept and promote a political view that I don't share. But that was incidental. I mean, I didn't believe in God. So anyway, so when I found Unitarian Universalism, I thought, ooh, maybe I could be a clergy person after all, and I was kind of embarrassed that was a kind of weird reason to go find a church, but it seemed to work. And the joke was on me, because I really needed a religious community, as it turned out. I just forgotten that I needed that. There you go. That actually is the short version, if you can believe it. So I want to leave a little time for everybody to talk, and we're almost at 11:15. Anyway, so we are going to take up the offering. What have I forgotten? Oh gosh, zoning out. I'm sorry, Zoom people. How do you find your way back when you have lost your way? Ooh. Nothing like a small one for Amy to stumble across at the end. Depends what the way is you've lost, I guess. I mean, I'm assuming here that you want to, you know, you're saying, like, I lost my way out of Judaism, and I said, oh, I don't think it's right for me. That's not the right path for me. It's lovely, but it's not the right one for me. So I didn't really lose my way. I just, what is it? Not all who wander are lost. I just wandered away. I think if you know you've lost your way, you've really, really done the big part, if it is something you need to get back to. And I will just say, you don't do it alone. Reach out and ask somebody. Tell somebody, hi, you can talk to me or to Reverend Kat. She's great to talk to about your questions and your problems as well. Say, here's where I was, and I don't know how to get back there. It's you know, the question. The answers depend so much on what your way was. that of course there's no one answer. There's never one answer, but don't do it alone. And if you don't have a dear friend who you can sit down and do it with, get some hired help. That's something ministers are here for. Anything else up there? Thank you all who waved, and I apologize, but I forgot to look at the screen.